I want to continue on this evening with looking at some of the key prophecies of the book of Daniel. The one that we look at tonight is maybe playing a little bit of a lesser role, but has a great devotional application, so I thought we would look at this evening. I'm not going to read all the verses here. The chapter is a bit lengthy, but join me. We're going to read, first of all, a section at the beginning, 1 through 17, and then we will skip to a section at the end, Daniel chapter 4. Nebuchadnezzar the king, unto all people, nations, and languages that dwell in all the earth, peace be multiplied unto you. I thought it good to show the signs and wonders that the high God hath wrought toward me. How great are his signs, and how mighty are his wonders. His kingdom is an everlasting kingdom, and his dominion is from generation to generation. I, Nebuchadnezzar, was at rest in mine house, and flourishing in my palace. I saw a dream which made me afraid, and the thoughts upon my bed and the visions of my head troubled me. Therefore made I a decree to bring in all the wise men of Babylon before me, that they might make known unto me the interpretation of the dream. Then came in the magicians, the astrologers, the Chaldeans, the soothsayers, and I told the dream before them, but they did not make known unto me the interpretation thereof. But at the last, Daniel came in before me, whose name was Belteshazzar, according to the name of my God, and in whom is the spirit of the holy gods. And before him I told the dream, saying, O Belteshazzar, master of the magicians, because I know that the spirit of the holy gods is in thee, and no secret troubleth thee, tell me the visions of my dream that I have seen, and the interpretation thereof. Thus were the visions of mine head in my bed. I saw, and behold, a tree in the midst of the earth, and the height thereof was great. The tree grew and was strong, and the height thereof reached unto heaven, and the sight thereof to the end of all the earth. The leaves thereof were fair, and the fruit thereof much, and in it was meat or food for all. The beasts of the field had shadow under it, and the fowls of the heaven dwelt in the boughs thereof. And all flesh was fed of it. I saw in the visions of my head upon my bed, and behold, a watcher and an holy one came down from heaven. He cried aloud and said thus, hew down the tree and cut off its branches, take off its leaves and shake off its leaves and scatter its fruit. Let the beasts get away from under it and the fowls from its branches. Nevertheless, leave the stump of its roots in the earth, even with a band of iron and brass in the tender grass in the field, and let it be wet with the dew of heaven, and let its portion be with the beasts in the grass of the field. Let its heart be changed from man's, and let a beast's heart be given unto him, and let seven times pass over him. This matter is by the decree of the watchers, and the demand by the word of the holy ones, to the intent that the living may know that the Most High ruleth in the kingdom of men, and giveth it to whomsoever he will, and setteth up over it the basest of men. Now, let's go to the end of the chapter and pick it up at verse 29. At the end of 12 months, he, that is Nebuchadnezzar, walked in the palace of the kingdom of Babylon. The king spoke and said, is not this great Babylon that I have built for the house of the kingdom by the might of my power and for the honor of my majesty? While the word was in the king's mouth, there fell a voice from heaven saying, O King Nebuchadnezzar, to thee it is spoken, the kingdom is departed from thee, and they shall drive thee from men, and thy dwelling shall be with the beasts of the field, and they shall make thee to eat grass as oxen, and seven times shall pass over thee until thou know that the Most High ruleth in the kingdom of men and giveth it to whomsoever he will. The same hour was the thing fulfilled with Nebuchadnezzar, and he was driven from men and did eat grass as oxen, and his body was wet with the dew of heaven, till his hairs were grown like eagle's feathers and his nails like bird's claws. At the end of the days, I, Nebuchadnezzar, lifted up mine eyes unto heaven, and mine understanding returned unto me. And I blessed the Most High, and I praised and honored him that liveth forever and ever, whose dominion is an everlasting dominion, and his kingdom is from generation to generation. And all the inhabitants of the earth are reputed as nothing, and he doeth according to his will in the army of heaven, and among the inhabitants of the earth, and none can stay his hand or say unto him, What doest thou? At the same time my reason returned unto me, and for the glory of my kingdom, mine honor and brightness returned unto me, my counselors and my lords sought unto me, and I was established in my kingdom, and excellent majesty was added unto me. Now I, Nebuchadnezzar, praise and extol and honor the King of heaven, all whose works are truth, and his ways judgment, and those that walk in pride he is able to abase. Gracious Lord in heaven, we thank you so much for your tender mercies, of which we have just read a fine example tonight. We pray that our hearts might be humble and tender and open tonight as we realize your great long-suffering and your patience, while at the same point we recognize that it does have limits, as we see in this story tonight. And help us that that message may come to our hearts with whatever application and poignancy and power that you might have for it tonight in our lives. Help me, Lord, just to make a simple presentation of this tonight, something that you can use and something that you will use. This is my prayer, that the word of the Lord may be glorified and have free course. For these things I pray in Jesus' holy name. Amen. Well, this is the second of Nebuchadnezzar's two dreams or visions or prophecies, if you will. Of course, the one that we looked at last time in Daniel chapter 2, world empires, a little more dramatic, because if you're kind of a prophecy buff or whatever, you're really interested in these future things. And when God tells this dream to Nebuchadnezzar and then finally Daniel interprets it, obviously it's a tremendous revelation of future events that only God could give. But in coming to the one that we have in chapter 4 tonight, he has another dream. It differs a little bit than the one that we saw in chapter 2 in that although it still deals with the future, because what it's talking about hasn't happened yet, the events really concern Nebuchadnezzar personally. So it's not so much that we have some dramatic presentation of future prophetic events, although what it details is prophetic. But as I said, it has a marvelous devotional application, so since we're doing this, it's not going to hurt us a little bit to spend some time with it. I think when you combine what you have in chapter 2, then you have in chapter 4, and particularly when you look then at chapter 3 between the two, it completes the story of how God brought Nebuchadnezzar to acknowledge in his heart what heretofore he had only paid lip service to. What is that? Well, we're going to compare two verses. Just compare with me Daniel chapter 2 and verse 47. Should we look at that for just a moment? Daniel 2 and verse 47. So at the end of the first dream and the first vision, Nebuchadnezzar is just overawed. Because remember, no one else is able to recall the dream, and certainly no one else knows the interpretation of the dream. And it's an awesome thing, and it seems as if Nebuchadnezzar gets the message and learns the lesson. Look at verse 47. The king answered unto Daniel and said, Of a truth it is that your God is a God of gods, and a Lord of kings, and a revealer of secrets, seeing thou couldest reveal this secret. So we begin to feel good about the thing. We begin to think that Nebuchadnezzar is moving forward, which I think he is. He's making progress, but what he says here really sounds like, wow, he's got the point of this. Does he or doesn't he? Well, apparently not. Because if he had really gotten the point, then what you have in chapter 3 and what you have in chapter 4 would never have taken place. And so we're forced to the conclusion that what Nebuchadnezzar did there and what he said there, though maybe he was sincere at the time, amounted to little more than what we would call today head knowledge or lip service. And that's something that I think strikes home to us, because we have to be very careful. You know, it's not really that uncommon a thing to have someone grow up in a church like this where they've come up in Sunday school class, they've heard the gospel, they've had Sunday school lesson after Sunday school lesson, and everyone just assumes they're saved. And then lo and behold, they get at some point in their teen years or sometimes even later than that, and they get convicted that they never really have been saved. What's the problem? Well, the problem is that sometimes we listen to things and it's not like we're trying to reject those things. We absorb them, but sometimes it just never has really gotten to the heart. And we kid ourselves and we deceive ourselves at times. And sometimes these people have given testimonies before, and sometimes these people have done all kinds of things. Maybe they've gone on a missions trip or something of that nature. And then all of a sudden, should we be shocked by that kind of thing? No, I think we should just praise the Lord for that kind of thing, because that's God in His long suffering and God in His mercy. But when we compare 2 in verse 47 to chapter 4 in verse 37, okay, what you saw in 2:47, now look at 4:37. We just read this. Now, that's the word in the verse. Now I, Nebuchadnezzar, praise and extol and honor the King of heaven, all whose words are truth and His judgment, and those that walk in pride He is able to abase. Well, now he's learned the lesson. Now it's gone from being something in his head to something he's really learned in his heart. And folks, I would suggest to you and to me tonight that that's always the design of what God has. And just because it doesn't always happen right away doesn't mean we give up or we think it isn't happening or that somehow God isn't working. No, God doesn't go by our plans. And the human heart is a rather interesting and intricate thing to consider. And God works in different ways and in different lives. Thank God he's working. And in Nebuchadnezzar's life, we see the proof of that. Tonight, the title of the message is that God is ruler of all. So before I get into just looking at the few thoughts I want to develop tonight, let me ask you this. How many times have you heard something like that in going to church? God is the ruler of all. Oh, lots of times, probably in one form or another since some of the earlier Sunday school classes. I mean, one of the first things we do with little children, right, is tell them the Bible stories. Don't you remember if those are days past for you, or if it hasn't happened yet, you can kind of remember you heard somebody say this, but when you get little kids, then you try to figure out, okay, we're supposed to have family devotions, and it was my wife and me, we were doing it before, now I've got these little kids in the home, what do we do now? And so you start looking for things that you can begin to start in on this, and you look for the books, you know, that kind of tell the Bible stories in kids' language, and you do all that kind of stuff. I think most adults still enjoy that. I always enjoyed reading those Bible stories to the kids, and I always found out that they loved to hear, you know, if they went in their room, especially the boys, if they went in their room and maybe they were not going to sleep or something, or maybe they want to hear a Bible story. And I had to go in and tell them the Bible story. You know what John's favorite Bible story was? It was the story when the angel went in and kicked Peter to wake him up. I could tell him that one time after time after time, and every time he laughed. So I don't know how much good it was to put him to sleep, but you tell the Bible stories, and we hear these things, and my question to you tonight is, okay, I'm not telling you anything new tonight, and I suspect that you've heard these Bible stories in the book of Daniel, whether you're an adult or young person, time after time after time. So somewhere along the way, someone has said, you know, the message of this is that God is the ruler of all, or in some such language. But really now, and you don't have to nod or wave your hand or put it up or anything, but is that really true tonight for you? Or is that just something we pay lip service to? I'm not saying you're not saved. I'm just saying this can characterize us. We can know a lot of Bible truth. How much Bible truth do you know? I think it's good to know Bible truth. Just because we don't always internalize it all right away doesn't mean it doesn't have effect and value in our lives. So, yes, but we do need to get to that place, right? I mean, we need to get from point A to point B, and that's really what this message is all about tonight. Nebuchadnezzar finally makes the trek from point A, where it's something that's just kind of floating around up here that he's forced to say, yeah, that's true, over to point B over here where he says, that's true. Okay, let's have a look. So in the message tonight, first of all, I want us to look at a hard road, and we will conclude by noticing that at the end is a happy ending. So that's kind of nice. I'm glad we can tell the story that way tonight. Getting from point A to point B in the life of Nebuchadnezzar turns out to be a long, hard road for the king. Does that seem like you sometimes? You know, folks, in a lot of ways, as all of us, we don't always just learn right away. It takes a lot of time sometimes. And like so many of us, he's proud. He's hardened at times. He's stubborn. Know anybody like that? Just look in the mirror. Not at your neighbor, just look in the mirror. Consider all the opportunities that God gave this man, and then think about yourself. Apply this to you. Apply this to me. The dream of chapter 2 has an obvious message, right? It's that God is the ruler of all. These empires, remember? The dream, the image with the head of gold and so forth and so on until finally you get down to the end. And at the end, that stone cut out without hands comes from the heavens and just smites this thing. It just tumbles everything. All these magnificent world empires, like I asked last Sunday night, so where is the Soviet Union? Just to speak of one modern. All these world empires, the Grecian Empire, the Roman Empire, the Medo-Persian Empire, the Babylonian Empire, where are they all now? Well, they're facts of history, and they're facts in the dustbin of history. And this stone cut out without hands comes and just smites that image on the feet, and it's just, everything is just blown away like the chaff in the wind. And Nebuchadnezzar says, wow, nobody else could tell me this dream. Nobody else knows this. Nobody else can cause these types of things to happen. God really is the sovereign. That was the point in the vision. And it was manifested because of everything about God in relationship to the future. That God knows the future. That God controls the future. And that in the future, God is all that matters in the future. So the dream of chapter 2 has an obvious message to it. What happens in chapter 3? Well, Nebuchadnezzar decides he'll build a golden image. Let's just turn a page if we need to so we can look at that briefly. I'm certainly not going to read all the verses. I think everyone here knows that story. But notice verse 1 of chapter 3. We'll look at that. Nebuchadnezzar the king. Now, by the way, 3 is in between 2 and 4, right? No, really, I'm not trying to be smart, but I want you to be sure you have that in your mind. Nebuchadnezzar the king made an image of gold whose height was 60 cubits, and the breadth thereof was 6 cubits, so that's 90 feet by 9 feet. This is not a small little token thing. He set it up in the plain of Dura in the province of Babylon. He makes an image of gold. Now the question is, why does he make an image of gold? Well, if we go back to chapter 2, what has he been told? So let's go back there for just a moment. Look at two verses there. Daniel chapter 2, you might not even have to turn the page. Verse 36, when Daniel gets ready to tell him the dream, he says, this is the dream, and we will tell the interpretation thereof before the king. Thou, O king, art a king of kings, for the God of heaven hath given thee a kingdom, power, and strength, and glory. And wheresoever the children of men dwell, the beasts of the field, the fowls of the heaven, hath he given into thine hand, and hath made thee. But who made thee? God made thee ruler over them all. Thou art this head of gold. Well, my thought is that it wouldn't be take too much for that to go to your head, would it? Especially when in the interpretation of the dream, Nebuchadnezzar realizes he's not only the top dog because he's the head of gold. All the metals descending are of lesser value, and all the kingdoms descending are of inferior. In some way, they are inferior to Nebuchadnezzar. That would be a rather head-swelling experience if we weren't really careful and didn't really know that God was ruler of all. If it was just something in the head and not really something in the heart, it would be easy for that to go to our heads. And that's exactly what happened. Obviously, the golden image is in response to what he learns in chapter 2, but it is not in God's honor, it's in his honor because he's the head of gold. And so he builds this. And by the way, just a couple of other footnotes in the chapter. The worship that is commanded of this golden image is all about the king and his gods, not God. How do I see this? Look at chapter 3, verse 12. We'll just look at a few of these. But it says here, there are certain Jews whom thou hast set over the affairs of the province of Babylon, Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego. These men, O king, have not regarded thee. You notice that? This is not about God. It's that they have not regarded thee. They serve not thy gods. It's not that they don't serve God. They serve not thy gods, nor worship the golden image which thou hast set up. See, it's about Nebuchadnezzar. It's not about God. When he put that image up, it wasn't about God. It was about him. So the worship is about the king and his gods. It's not about the God that he learned about in chapter 2. And the decree, in verse 29, look at this just for one more thought, the decree that we have here that he makes, when finally at the end he gets the message after the fiery furnace and there's four in there instead of three, and once again he's just awed about the power of the true and living God, he says, therefore I make a decree. Now, what is his decree? Did this thing get from his head into his heart? That's the question. Read this and see what you think. Therefore, I make a decree that every people, nation, language which speak anything amiss against the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego shall be cut in pieces, and their houses shall be made a dunghill, because there is no other God that can deliver after this sort. What's this about? This is basically just that you can't speak against Daniel's God. There's a big difference between acknowledging him as the true and living God and just saying you can't speak against Daniel's God, because, by the way, beloved, that's how the whole thing got started. Back to that chapter 3 and verse 12, these Jews, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, were accused. There are certain Jews. It's that Jewish God that was defamed and denigrated. There are certain Jews whom thou hast set over the affairs of the province of Babylon, and they don't worship your God. So when the whole experience is over with, once again God is dealing with him, God's giving him an opportunity to recognize who is the true and living God, and who is the king of all and ruler of all. But when he makes a decree, it kind of really is telling. It's a tell. It's kind of just that, all right, nobody now speaks against that. You guys were defaming these Jews' God before. You're not going to do that anymore, because he's obviously demonstrated, you know, his power. I don't think we're there yet. I know we're not there yet. We haven't quite gotten from point A to point B. We still got some rocks in the road yet to go over. So we consider all the opportunities that God gave to this man that we're seeing here in chapter 2 and in chapter 3. And then we consider this. In mercy, come in chapter 4, now, the crowning thing, in mercy come what? Another dream and another chance to respond. And even in the beginning, it's just the dream, and there's another chance before the axe falls. So what is it? The tree is an image of prosperity and dominion. It exactly describes the king. We already read it in chapter 4, verses 10 to 12, but we didn't read the interpretation of it in 20 through 22, so let's look at that now. Tell me if this doesn't exactly describe King Nebuchadnezzar. That's who is meant. Daniel says this, the tree that thou sawest, verse 20, which grew and was strong, whose height reached unto the heaven, and the sight thereof to all the earth, whose leaves were fair, and the fruit thereof much, and in it was food for all, under which the beasts of the field dwelt, and upon whose branches the fowls of the heaven had their habitation. It is thou, O king, that art grown and become strong, for thy kingdom is grown and reacheth unto the heaven, and thy dominion to the end of the earth. So the tree is an image of prosperity and dominion. It exactly describes the king, all those things though God had given to the king. But he's walking around, well, we're going to see, what does he do? He's walking around in the palace and he's looking at all these beautiful things and he says, this is all me. Then you notice the decree proceeds from heaven and reminds him, it's from heaven, reminding him. Here's another reminder. Here's another evidence of God's mercy. Look at verse 17, chapter 4. This matter is by the decree of the watchers and the demand by the word of the Holy One. So this is not just one of the astrologers or magicians or soothsayers who've already proven their worthlessness. It's not even from Daniel. This is a messenger directly from heaven. And what is the message? To the intent, here's what you haven't quite gotten internalized yet. Here's what you haven't quite gotten from your head to your heart. To the intent that the living may know that the Most High ruleth. He's the ruler of all. That the Most High ruleth in the kingdom of men and giveth it to whomsoever he will and setteth up over it the basest of men. It's all God's to do. And I think he's doing some of that today. At least when it mentions the basest of men. Well, we see one last thing. The opportunities to respond both now and later are all second chances. Boy, God is the God of the second chance, isn't he? Verse 15, look at the language. Nevertheless, leave the stump and its roots in all the earth, even with a band of iron, to leave the stump. But you know, some things, you cut them down. If you don't go there and put that stump killer on them, or get your chainsaw and cut those wet, you know, cut those lines in the thing and then pour on that stump killer, you're gonna have, it'll just be bugging you. Especially those weed trees. They'll bug you anyway. This is a second chance. Leave the stump and his roots in the earth, even with a band of iron and brass in the tender grass of the field, and let it be wet with the dew of heaven, and let his portion be with the beasts of in the grass of the earth. Second chances, even still more to respond before it happens. Verse 27, look at that. Wherefore, and this is after Daniel tells him, here's what the dream is, and it applies to you. And remember, we didn't read this verse, but Daniel gets to the end of this thing, and he's troubled. Nebuchadnezzar says, don't be troubled, just tell me what the dream means. And he's troubled, and he says, well, and here's what he says. Wherefore, O king, verse 27, let my counsel be acceptable unto thee, and break off thy sins by righteousness, and thine iniquities by showing mercy to the poor, if it may be a lengthening of thy tranquility. So Daniel reaches out to him. He's an evangelistic man. And then verse 34, the last verse we'll look at it as we develop this first thought. At the end of the days, I, Nebuchadnezzar, lifted up mine eyes. See, when the experience is over, it's still forgiveness and another chance. When it's all over. I want to summarize this, and I would like you just to listen to the little phrases that I use to summarize this and think about your own life. What have we just been over? What have we seen in summary? God's loving servant. Who's that? That's Daniel. Who's that in your life? Probably lots of people. Who is God sending into your life with his message? Who is God sending into your life with his message? And it may be some obvious people, and it may be some inobvious people, but I suspect if God is sending someone into your life with his message, you kind of know this. Don't resent that. I mean, once in a while, the servant, once in a while, the servant makes a mistake and so forth, but don't be upset with the messenger. Recognize in it God's mercy, God's loving servant he sends. Next, God's pleading voice. Right? Through Daniel. Next, God's amazing patience. And finally, God's abundant mercy. Oh, wow, folks. Wow. Just think about that tonight. God's loving servant, God's pleading voice, God's amazing patience, and God's abundant mercy. You know, when you start talking about God's abundant mercy, remember the verse in Lamentations chapter 3, verse 2? I think if anybody knows a verse in Lamentations or verses, this is it, where it talks about the fact that his mercies are new every morning. Remember that one? Great is thy faithfulness. It's a really interesting story about the time when Gladstone was the Chancellor of the Exchequer in England, and he sent down to the Treasury Department, and what he wanted from the man there was certain statistics about budget proposals. Does this sound up to date? And he wanted to give a speech about this. So this man, who was a statistician of sorts, he made a really bummer. He made a bad mistake. But Gladstone had never really known the man to make a mistake before. He was so certain of the man's accuracy that he really didn't take time to double check and verify the figures. He just went straight to the floor with the speech that he developed to the House of Commons, to the floor of the House of Commons with his speech based on, and his appeal based on, these incorrect figures. And so he made his speech, but his speech was no sooner made than it was published in the newspapers. And of course, you know how that is. Now we talk about fact checking people. That's not really new either. We need to do it more now. And so there he was just kind of embarrassed in the newspapers. Well, so whose fault was this? Well, probably his own for not double-checking, but the greater fault was with the man. And so Gladstone was just, well, how would you think he would feel? Went to his office, and at once he called for this man, this statistician, that had generated this humiliating circumstance for Gladstone. The man came in full of fear. He was absolutely certain that he was going to lose his job. But instead, here's what William Gladstone said. Think about these words. I want to read them for you. I know how much you must be disturbed over what has happened. And I have sent for you to put you at your ease. For a long time you have been engaged in handling the intricacies of the national accounts, and this is the first mistake you have made. I want to congratulate you and express to you my keen appreciation. Wow. What would your estimation of that be? Well, it took a big man to do that. A big man and a big mercy. But I'm here to tell you something tonight, folks. God will not be outdone by any man. And God is bigger than the biggest of men. And God has a mercy bigger than any mercy any man in this world or any woman in this world is capable of displaying. And hasn't He proven that? All the times He sent His loving servant, His pleading voice, His amazing patience, His abundant mercy into our lives. It has a happy ending, and we don't need much time for this. Thank God it has a happy ending, because the king finally submits in his heart, and we're able to see this in verse 36 and 37. 37 I've read a couple of times, I won't do it again, but 36, look, at the same time my reason returned unto me. God didn't have to do that. He lost his marbles, that's not good. God gathered them up for him. And for the glory of my kingdom, mine honor and brightness returned unto me, and my counselors and my lord sought unto me. He brought the people back to him. Must have been God must have allowed the basest of men to be in there during this gap so that Nebuchadnezzar was looking pretty good. Have you ever noticed how that has a way of happening in politics? You know, the new guy comes along and just trashes the incumbent, because that's the only way to get elected, right? You have to trash the incumbent. My theory on that is, if you don't have a better message than that, doesn't sound like you have much going for you. If your whole message is to trash the incumbent. But lots of times that happens, and then all of a sudden this new guy gets in there, and he's twice the jerk the old guy was. And then you see these bumper stickers that people go around with on their car that say, "Don't blame me, I didn't vote for." And that, you can put lots of names in, because it seems to happen lots of times. I suspect, though, that he finally submits in his heart, and I think that he has a lot of company here tonight in all of us. Lots of times we've been proud and hard and stubborn. Lots of times we haven't been willing to yield, but God in His mercy, His loving servants, His pleading voice, His amazing patience, His abundant mercy. Beloved, here is the story of a man who lived as if his life and his attainments were his own. That's what he said, right? He was walking around his palace and said, "It's all mine. It's all the product of my hand. It's all things that I've done. I get all the glory. I get all the credit for this." All I can really say is, as you and I compare ourselves to him, at least he was heathen. You know what I mean by that? You and I are not supposed to be that. You and I are supposed to be churched people and people who know the Bible and who know better, but sometimes I'm afraid we live this way. Sometimes I'm afraid we only pay lip service to the fact that God is the ruler of all, that we serve at His pleasure, that all God has to do is send the word. The word is given. Isn't that what happens here? The word is given. Look at this, 36:30, verse 30 again. The king spoke and said, "Is not this great Babylon that I have built for the house of the kingdom by the might of my power for the honor of my majesty?" While the word was in the king's mouth, there fell a voice from heaven. That's how quick it can be. You have any fear of God here tonight? Is this anything you would maybe want to consider? I ought to maybe consider that, you know, what you and I are doing in the living of our lives and in the decisions we're making. Oh, yeah, I go to church. Oh, yeah, I know that God is the ruler of all. Oh, yeah, I'm a Christian. But sometimes we don't live that way. I want to close tonight with a little story that, well, I guess before I tell you the story, I just guess I ask this question. Must we, like Nebuchadnezzar, learn the hard way? I'm glad it has a happy ending, but when I think about this, I can't help but think of Proverbs 29:1. It's a scary verse to me. But it says, he that being often reproved, hardeneth his neck, shall be suddenly destroyed, and that without remedy. Does God do this right away? That sounds harsh, but does God do this right away? No. It says, he that being often reproved, hardeneth his neck, shall be, the word is given, suddenly destroyed, and that without remedy. That's sobering. So I want to tell you a little story. It actually was used by Mark DeHaan in one of the Daily Bread devotionals. Basically, and I think the title of the devotional was Proverbs 29:1. It's a long story. Anyway, here's how the story goes, that in August of 1989, a major fire broke out under an elevated section of the New Jersey Interstate 78, an elevated section, right? Okay, so you get the picture. It's not just running on roadbed on the ground, but it's an elevated, you know, they build these things. It's just elevated. It's up off the ground. And fire broke out under that thing. They said that the heat was so intense that it buckled parts of the highway and forced the closing of this major East Coast artery. The governor said it was the worst transportation crisis in years. Afterwards, of course, there was an investigation which brought to light some interesting things. Brought to light that there had been a long-standing problem. It revealed that the fire broke out in a dump site in which construction debris had been collecting for years. The owners of the site had been convicted of a multi-million dollar conspiracy to allow the illegal dumping of construction debris. But why wasn't it cleaned up if that's the case? You got it. Appeals. Appeals in federal and state courts frustrated the efforts of the state of New Jersey to clean up the area. Not until the day after the fire did a state appeals court finally order the operator of the dump to stop accepting trash and begin clearing the site. A little too late, right? He goes on to say in the devotional, that fire tells a basic story of life. Most of our problems don't just happen. They are the result of a long series of bad decisions. He that being often reproved hardeneth his neck. They are the result of a long series of bad decisions. 2 Chronicles 36 illustrates this and reminds us that God will not allow his children to continue in sin. Even though he is long-suffering, his patience has a limit. If we don't correct the problem ourselves, we can be sure that he will discipline. Well, it's quite interesting when you go back and you look up 2 Chronicles 36, what that story is. We won't really turn, but it's the story of Judah's final days. It tells the story of these final kings and Nebuchadnezzar, right back to where we are. Nebuchadnezzar coming in different waves because these kings continued to resist God, continued to resist the message of his servants, his loving servants, his pleading voice, his abundant mercy. All those things they turned a deaf ear to. And there's a verse in that chapter that ties it in with Proverbs 29:1. And here's what it says in verse 16 of 2 Chronicles chapter 36. But they mocked the messengers of God and despised his words and misused his prophets until the wrath of the Lord rose up against his people till there was no remedy. He that being often reproved hardeneth his neck shall be suddenly destroyed, and that without remedy. What's that mean? Does that mean you've committed the unpardonable sin? No, that just means that God, the word is given. You've crossed the line. There are limits to God's patience. I just ask my question again. Must we, like Nebuchadnezzar, learn the hard way? I hope not. Folks, I hope not. And I have no idea really what your situation and circumstances are tonight. For me, I'm just amazed and really appreciating God's loving servants, which over the years he's used in my life, and God's pleading voice time and time again, and God's amazing patience time and time again, the God of the second chances, and God's abundant mercy. The only thing I can say is it really helps to have a little healthy fear of God mixed in there. The person who walks around thinking, I can always be forgiven. I'll get serious about God later. Jesus said this, you don't fear him who can kill the body. You fear him who, after he hath killed the body, can cast both body and soul into hell. It just takes God to give the word. Let's don't go there. Let's don't go there. And if the Lord is speaking to you about something tonight, a spiritual decision you need to make, a step in your life you need to take, or you might be here tonight and never been saved. And now here you are again, and you're uncomfortable, and you're maybe a little bit irritated. Don't be mad at the messenger. I'm not here to irritate you. You know what it really is? It's God's love. It's God reaching out to you. It's God squeezing your heart. It's God saying, you know, I love you enough that I brought you to that church again tonight to hear it again. And yes, you're rankled by it. Yes, you're convicted by it. But it's because I'm trying to draw you to myself and give you the forgiveness of sins. Or if you're a Christian like Jonah and you're running from God and you're upset because here again, you're in church and all you were doing was fulfilling a requirement because somebody said you had to come to church or people expected it of you. You had to be in church and here you are and you're rankled again because it's making you a little itchy and a little uncomfortable and you're a little convicted. It's just God. It's not me. I don't have any power. It's just God. It's just God. Must we, like Nebuchadnezzar, learn the hard way? Father, help us tonight. Thank you for loving us the way you do. Thank you for the many times we have failed and you have forgiven. What a great thing that is. We fail, you forgive. But help us never to be presumptuous. Help us not to just figure we can go and sin and there's always forgiveness and we don't need to worry about it. Help us to realize that sometimes the other shoe falls. That's not pleasant. Thank you that in this case there was a happy ending. Help us always to believe there can be a happy ending. I pray, Lord, that you'll encourage some people here tonight that are struggling on behalf of someone else, someone they're burdened for, someone they're praying for, someone who seems to be hard, proud, and stubborn. Help us to realize how you prevailed in the life of Nebuchadnezzar. And help us to be renewed and encouraged in our belief that you can prevail and work in the life of that individual. And so for people who are breathing prayers just like that tonight, I ask you to hear those prayers, to work in those hearts. And I pray on behalf of anyone here tonight for whom some of those things may be true, that you will work in hearts. Send us revival, I pray, and help us to realize that we don't have to wait for Will Galkin. We pray these things now in Jesus' wonderful name. Amen.